Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Slaughter Podcast will be discussing topics that some listeners may find disturbing.
If you're still listening, it's Y-O-U apostrophe R-E.
Like S apostrophe Lauter. Hi guys.
Welcome to our latest episode of Slaughter. Thanks for joining us. And I'm going to tell my story first.
Because your story?
I'm the most important. This is the sassy episode. So, if you recognise it, shut your mouth because you'll ruin it.
I didn't think I recognise anything. Everyone who knows me knows I've only got 10 meg of RAM in my brain.
So, Jessica Sayers was attending school in Staines, Surrey, high school girl, living with her gran, basically a normal 16-year-old. She had friends. She studied for GCSEs. Actually, that's not normal for teenagers. She had friends.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that she lived with a gran.
Quite a lot of them do. She had a best friend called Alice at school, and Alice was friends with another older girl called Gemma Barker, who could drive. So, 2 years older, which is a bit weird when you're 16, hanging out with someone upper sixth form.
That's basically our relationship.
Yeah, we didn't hang out at school. That would have been
weird. True. You pretended not to know me.
And they all basically became friends together, hung out all the time, and she'd drive them around. Her family, so Jessica's family, thought it was a little bit weird that she was older, but they just got sort of left them to it. And a lot of their friendship wasn't actually in person. And this is kind of our era because it was on...
But they went to the new school, the same school.
Yeah, but a lot of the time they spoke on MSN Messenger at night.
Oh, of course.
Of course. Which was basically both our lives for most, like, quite a lot of our teenage years.
Yeah, BRB, my mum needs the phone.
GTG.
I went to a lead mining museum last weekend.
Is this in your new relationship?
Yeah, that's the kind of romantic dates we go on. Goodness. It was fucking good as well because, side note, that, well, the point I'm bringing up is that we tried to pay on card and the guy in the back office, they were like, Steve, get off the phone! Because the card machine needed to use dial-up. Like,
no,
how crazy that.
That's a museum in itself.
Yeah, right. But she was like, oh, there's some things to crawl through, so watch yourself.
What?
Literally, you first go in, you climb up a ladder that was just as wide as I was. Like, I was starting to panic already. And then you're just in, like, the loft, which is just a pitch black maze of trapped spaces.
That's terrifying.
Was absolutely freaking out.
And this is a popular museum, or was this sort of like a...
But they use dial-up on the card machine.
And that's what you took away from that experience.
Yeah.
Okay. So Alice got added on MSN by a guy named Aaron. Now, for all you youngsters, it wasn't like Facebook where you have a profile you could look at. It was literally just someone tried to add you.
You
couldn't
even put
yes
a picture on, could you? It was just everyone had the little green man.
The only way to express yourself was what colour font you had and what style of font you had.
And which song lyrics you chose.
Yeah. You could have like a little phrase, couldn't you, that would go next to your name.
And if you start every word with a capital letter. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Or every other letter.
Every other letter, capital.
I've recently been listening on Spotify to like old Green Day albums like Dookie and stuff. And I was like, lyrically, I'm not there anymore.
Really?
Like, why was I going round like this middle class church going girl singing about like being burnt out, being paranoid?
Oh, you remember the lyrics,
drugs.
But you don't empathize with them anymore. Yeah. Why would
I was such an idiot. I was like, yeah, down with the moral majority. Like, and then I'm off to church now. I didn't know what the fuck I was saying.
Why would 30-year-old like they're always older than you when you look back?
Then they should be. Like songs about how much like you hate your dad and your mum and dad are so annoying.
Papa Roach going, cut my love into pieces. You're 45. They probably were younger than that, but still. You've gone past
that
stage.
But I loved it. I felt like I was super angsty at the time. I definitely used some Green Day lyrics as my MSN.
My childhood is awful. No, it's fine.
I also had fake MSN accounts. I was probably called Aaron at one time.
Oh, you catfish.
Everyone did.
I didn't have a fake one. I was too busy on my real one.
Oh, piss off. I'm sure we made fake ones together.
Probably.
Talk to like weirdo. And just like freak people out. Be like,
I've got black bold font. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, do you want to suck my toes? Something like that. Nothing to feel bad about. Go for it.
So Aaron added her and she began talking to him a lot. And he told her that she was gorgeous. He called her babe. Now, this was a little bit past our generation because they did have Facebook as well. So
MSN plus Facebook. That's a weird period in time. That must be literally
before
2 years.
Chat. Yeah. In that very small window where they overlapped for a while.
I've narrowed it down based on the social media interactions to 2007.
Probably. She did look at his Facebook and he did have some photos and he had her friend Gemma as a friend, so she kind of thought that's fine. But not many photos, kind of all on the same sort of date or day.
Like where they just do, here's me with glasses, here's me without glasses, here's me with a t-shirt, now I've put a jumper on.
Gemma told Jess that she knew Aaron in real life and that she should go out with him. And then they became boyfriend and girlfriend.
Oh, I know this story!
I fucking knew you would!
Yes, I know this story!
Right, keep your mouth shut. I told you!
I really like it.
I told you you'd know it.
It's a good one, everyone.
I knew you'd guess it so soon.
Okay, continue. Right.
So, they became boyfriend and girlfriend, but they'd never met. Of course.
That's probably like the secret to a really good relationship.
Just never meet.
Never meet. Never be like when you do see catfish, like we've been dating for 6 years and we've never met.
Leave it at that.
That never lasts in real life. Because when you see how they eat, how they walk,
how they breathe.
Exactly.
So Alice wanted to meet up with Alice is dating him and Alice wanted to meet up with Aaron and eventually he agreed to meet up with her. So
eventually
Aaron...
he agreed, like, you're gorgeous, I love you. Ugh. Don't really want to spend time with you though.
So Aaron got a taxi to a park near Alice's house and Alice went and met him and he wore dark clothes. He had a hat on and they kind of just walked around the park just chatting as you do. I mean, there was a lot of park dates when you were a teenager because...
Where else are you going to go?
Yeah, you don't want to introduce them to the parents straight away. So Alice allowed Aaron to chat to her friend Jess on MSN as well and they started chatting and they'd obviously talk about Alice and how much he liked Alice, and Aaron would phone Alice every day but he also phoned Jess every day. Now on the documentary that I watched, I'll tell you the name at the end because it'll totally give everything away, but she said, oh yeah, it was fine, we used to just chat every day. Like, if Luke phoned you every day, I'd be a bit weirded out.
I did have like my first boyfriend when I was in year 7 that I dated for like, oh my god, 6 months. It was proper serious. And then he split up with me and then started dating one of my best friends at the time, Claire. And
what?
Then, yes, it was, I was really pissed off about it. And then Claire was like, oh, can you come to the park with me and Chris because I'm a bit nervous to be with him on my own. I'm like, bitch, that's my ex-boyfriend. I'm sure I've mentioned this before because it really hurts now.
Well, you shouldn't date people that you're nervous to be alone with either.
She doesn't. She claims not to remember it now. I was like, I remember every second of those third wheel dates. Yeah, because then I got back with him after. Fuck you.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. So Aaron had dark brown hair. He was about 5'7". He wore a hat and it had tassels on and a pom-pom on the top. And he never took his hat off.
But it stunk.
And Gemma was dating Aaron's older brother, Jack. So she would tell Alice about Aaron's family, but Alice never went to meet them. It was kind of a separate thing. But she would say, oh, yeah, they're really nice.
Because Jess was the older one, wasn't she?
Gemma.
Oh, okay.
Gemma's the one with the car, yeah. So she's dating the older brother, Jack.
Yes, that's right.
So if Aaron ever wasn't getting attention, he would come out with quite outlandish big news. So like a relative dying or something awful that's happened to him, so that both Jess and Alice would feel sorry for him, feel sympathy for him, and sort of come rallying and be like, oh no, what's the problem? Well, I think that's a pretty common teenage sort of thing.
Yeah, there's always something going on.
Kid in my tutor group who cried every week. And he's got these friends who will just hug him for about 5 minutes.
Hugging is a big thing, though. You see it when they go through that phase about like year 8 to year 10, where you have to hug to say hello, hug to say goodbye, regardless of how long the interaction is.
Hug if someone says something cute.
You're just excited to be able to touch people, I think.
Yeah. So Aaron's friend Luke then added Jess on MSN. So
just on that, though, it definitely goes. I literally complained to the head teacher this week because someone stood too close to me at the photocopier. I was like, tell that bitch to back off. She's a supply teacher. I don't want her coming round me.
Oh, no one likes a supply teacher. So Aaron had a friend called Luke and he had a Jess on MSN and they started chatting and he would be really flirty again and they began to meet up and they would basically sit together and talk and hug or kiss. Now he wore sort of track suits and he had spiky hair, but he again always wore a hat and it was very different to Aaron. He spoke differently on MSN, had a different style and personality and Gemma kind of backed off at this point. So Alice has got Aaron, Jess has got Luke, and sort of Gemma's going out with Jack and sort of got her own life. So they sort of don't hang out as much. They're still friends, but they're not as close as they were. Now Luke began to put pressure on Jess to have sex, and she was really reluctant. And she spoke about how Luke would start putting his hands down her skirt and down her pants and would touch her, and she would tell him no, and he just wouldn't stop. So pretty grim. And she still liked him afterwards, and I think there is that kind of teenage thing of just putting up with stuff because you think, oh, they're a nice guy really, or maybe this is what
and realistically is. Yeah, that's the thing, realistically it is a confusing time and you sort of feel like, I know that you're supposed to, get when you get older, do these sort of things, I don't want to do them now, is it something that's wrong with me? And you don't automatically think this is wrong, he's abusing my rights, you just think, oh my god, I need to get used to this because this is what older people do.
Yeah, absolutely. But she wasn't happy and they weren't talking as much. And then while she was on holiday, Luke went off with another girl from their school. They had an internet relationship, so they weren't meeting up. But he just apparently just started chatting to this other girl, and that was the end of what was going on with Jess and Luke. And I think probably in some ways she was sort of relieved. So this new boy, the same exact day, Connor McCormack.
So she's just split up with Luke and then a new boy appears.
Yeah. Connor McCormack.
That's like Tinder.
He had a Jess on MSN and he was really sweet from the start. So he told her he'd been told by Luke and he was friends with Luke about all the sex stuff that he'd been trying and he didn't agree with it and he thought it was really awful and she deserved a lot better. So they started a relationship and they were talking every day and he was really supportive. And he told her his dad worked for Simon Cowell, who everyone knows who Simon Cowell is, don't they? I don't need to explain that.
Yeah, I think
even
so.
Americans know he's a dick. And he had Justin Bieber hair, which Jess was really into. They would meet up on the green outside of her house. Now, they had a really weird relationship. He would always wear a hat and have a hood over the top of it, but have it really low on his face so she could basically just see the bottom of his nose and his mouth. And he told her he had alopecia and that he was really shy. And Jess's brother had alopecia, so she sort of accepted that and was quite sweet about it and didn't make him take his hood off or his hat off.
Wait, so she saw, when she dated Luke, did she see his face?
Yeah.
But Aaron wears hats.
Aaron wears hats. Luke wore hats and tracksuits. And then Connor wore a really low hat and a hood.
Connor's like Sia in the situation.
What?
Like how Sia has the wig over her face.
Oh, yeah. But he was really sweet. He was really caring. But another thing that he did that was really weird, which is another case of a teenager just going along with something really odd just because they think it's probably fine. But as an adult, you'd be like, what the fuck? Is that they wouldn't actually talk at all. He would write down messages on his phone and then show her. and then she would answer vocally, and then he would text and then like show her again. So that was the whole of their communication, apart from texting and obviously MSN.
It is that lack of confidence as a young person, because the first time someone did it, I'd be like, what?
Like, imagine now if you went on a date with someone and they were just writing messages going, I'm shy, so I can't actually talk to your
mate.
I
used to get super annoyed when my housemate would text me from downstairs. I'm like, just come the fuck up and talk to me.
I used to get annoyed when they would leave a fucking passive-aggressive note about crumbs in the kitchen. I was like, my parents own this house. I'll crumb it up if I want.
Oh.
They did.
Bratty princess. Hello.
Well, I didn't say that.
My parents own everything.
She's just
my parents own your ass. I can do what I want.
Yeah, well, I didn't say that. I just went, oh yeah, sorry, I'll try and be cleaner next time. I wasn't even dirty.
And then got them evicted because by emailing your parents.
No, I wish I could. They needed the money. So, Jess's friends would say to Jess, don't you think that's a bit weird? But she kind of just
ditch him.
And they also said that it was weird how both Connor and Luke had basically just added loads of people on Facebook at once and hardly had any photos. Jess was like,
although to be fair as well, early days of Facebook, like people might just get a Facebook.
You're a teenager, you don't give a shit, do you? Like, I've got a boyfriend.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
Yeah. So Alice and Jess would also go on to St. George's Hill, which is a really posh area. And that is where Connor told her that he lived, and Luke said that he lived as well. So they were still dating Luke and Connor. But they would go and sort of wait outside, and it was a gated community, so they'd wait outside the gates on a bit of grass. And they'd go at maybe 6 at night, and the lads would say, oh, we'll be there soon, and just never show up. And the girls would be there for hours just waiting and hoping that they'd
dump
show
them
up. Yeah, terrible. Oh my God. And one time,
if there's any girls listening who are dating boys and they think, oh, he texts me, oh, he doesn't show up, dump him now. And if you dump him and it doesn't go well for you, we'll send you some stickers, because it is going to be better. I promise,
for sure. So one time Jess got into this gated community, and she went and knocked on the door of the address that Connor had said that he lived at, and a woman answered and said that Connor didn't actually live there, and no one called Connor lived around there. And she spoke to Connor, obviously texted him or MSN'd him, and he said that it was the maid, and she had to say that because
security.
Oh. Alice and Luke, being 16, being going out for a while, started having a bit of a sexual relationship. But every time that they had sex, which was pretty infrequent because they sort of just started that, they both kept their clothes on in the dark. She thought that was pretty normal. And he was really nice, and he made sure that she was really comfortable. But they didn't undress in front of each other. Now, one evening, Luke was playing with Alice's brother in his room when he was round. And he asked Alice to pass his keys, and she couldn't find them. So she looked in his rucksack and found a pink dildo, and she freaked out. Why have you, we've just started having sex, why have you got a dildo in your bag? And he said that he had used it on her, but he'd used it on her once.
Oh, what? Like, oh, yes, I have been using this on you.
One time, apparently, and all the other times was his.
My penis.
Yeah. But she was really confused, really weirded out by this.
I'm fucking confused as to who's dating who. I thought Luke was gone. I'm really
Alice and Luke are still together. Aaron had gone. Yeah, Jess and... Oh, shit. Yeah, sorry. So, Alice is sleeping with Aaron. Luke's gone. Jess is now with Connor, which is her second boyfriend after Luke.
Regardless of whatever catfishing situation may or may not be happening here, this is every bit as confusing as actual teenage love lives.
So Alice and Aaron have started having a sexual relationship, and she found Aaron's dildo.
And he's been slipping in the dildo every now and then.
Yeah.
Just for a break, I imagine.
So he says.
I bet he told her something really good, like, well, you can only do it twice in a day or your balls fall off, so I had to dildo you. I didn't want you to be upset, something like
that.
Well,
she was upset. She was very weirded out. So,
I wonder if you've ever been, not you, but do you think we've ever been mystery dildoed? Is that something people are doing?
Look.
Gorilla dildoing?
I don't think so.
I mean, I'd love to do it on someone, but I've got nothing to replace it with.
What?
I can't be like, oh, one time it was my dick, one time it was a dildo.
Yeah, you'd have to peg
unless him. They make, I guess I could get like finger sized dildos.
You get a little strap on.
I just think it'd be like a fun game.
Finger or dildo.
Yeah.
If it's consensual, yeah.
Yeah, a consensual game of guess what's up there.
Gerbil.
Oh, no.
No. So, Connor and Jess are still going out. Right. Do I need to go through it again, or is everyone up to speed?
Let's just recap.
Right.
So, there's the two little girls.
Right. So
Jess and Alice.
There's three friends. Gemma, Alice, Jess.
So Gemma's the old one.
Gemma's older. She's dating Jack, who she's gone off. Alice started dating Aaron. They're still together. Jess went out with Luke. He was a bit of a shit and he did some non-consensual stuff to her. They broke up. She's going out with Connor.
But now Alice and Aaron are playing Guess What's Up There.
Yeah.
Got it.
But non-consensually. So
non-consensually. Guess what I'm raping you with.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, I mean, it's not rape because it's she thinks
she just didn't know that she's agreed to have anything different.
Yeah,
yeah.
So Connor and Jess, they were planning on spending the night together, mostly because Connor's nan died, and
mostly because
yeah,
my gran's died, and I just really feel like sex would help. So that's probably a line that men have used the world over.
I mean, every day,
I'm really sad. You're going to have to suck it.
God. But when Jess... So Jess, I think Jess wasn't up for him staying over for sex. So this was Connor's way of getting himself to sleep in her bed. So Connor said that his gran had died and could he stay at her house because he didn't want to be alone. So Jess asked her gran and her gran said, yes, but don't be having any sex now. Which
pointless,
but you're letting him stay in the room, so you're sort of agreeing to that. So Jess told her gran that Connor had lost his voice because obviously he doesn't speak.
Oh yeah, shit, I forgot about that.
Yeah. So Connor comes round.
So what? They're not going to be like up all night chatting.
I know, right? I was thinking the other day because
blue light's not good for you, Connor.
I was thinking the other day because someone was talking about someone who worked in a deaf school, and I was thinking, how quiet would that be all of the time? Imagine, you wouldn't have to be quiet down, kids, because they're already quiet.
That's a really good point.
But then if they didn't want to, if you were telling them off, they could just close their eyes. And they couldn't do shit.
That is funny.
Okay. Yeah, so Colin came around and Jess's cran says, hi, you could take your hat off if you want inside. It's nice and warm in
how
here.
How rude.
He obviously doesn't say, no, I'm all right, thanks. He grunts at her. And she is like, bitch. She does not like this boy, but she doesn't kick him out. Think maybe she thinks, oh, he's just lost his gran, but she's not impressed. So at bedtime, Connor and Jess were kissing. They're in bed now. They're in the room. And Connor took her clothes off and started trying to go down on her. And she said no, but he didn't stop. Despite her saying no, and then she felt something hard go into her. And then he did eventually stop, and right at that point, Alice phones her. Now, Jess answered the call to Alice. She's obviously really upset because this awful thing's happened to her.
But I guess it's like a good excuse to be like, oh, you've got to stop, I'm going to pick up the phone.
I think she was obviously, how awful, and this lad's in her bed that she trusts. But she doesn't tell Alice why she's upset. She doesn't say something's just happened. Alice is saying, why are you upset? Connor then, while she's on the phone to Alice, typed, tell Aris, Aaron's been in a car accident.
And I just kept this information to myself.
I just thought I'd tell you now.
Yeah.
So Jess told Alice, and Alice starts freaking out, obviously really upset. Because even though she's had this sort of weird interaction with Aaron about the dildo in the bag, she's still her boyfriend. So Connor then said, tell her that on the phone, tell her that he's on life support. So
I'd just be like, what the fuck? Now's the time to start speaking. You've just kept that to yourself this whole time.
She obviously just didn't. I mean, she
did. I have seen this documentary, and you do get the impression from watching her that she is not the sharpest.
Yeah, bless her. Yeah.
Well meaning, but not particularly discerning.
Yeah. So They end the call and then Colin went to sleep. Obviously, Jess is lying there thinking, I can't sleep. I've just found out that my friend's boyfriend's been in a car accident. I've just been...
Assaulted
by the person lying in the bed next to me.
He's still wearing his fucking hat.
Yeah, still lying there in his hat. But so she turns round and his hat's higher up than it normally would be. She sees the side profile of Aaron. And she is like, what the fuck is Aaron doing in my bed?
Out of the hospital.
And then she starts sort of being like, oh my God, Aaron's come in here pretending to be Connor and then has assaulted me. So she is freaking out. She doesn't kick him out. She waits till the morning.
That would make sense to her as well, I guess, because you know that Aaron has assaulted. I assume her and Jess have talked and she knows that Aaron has assaulted Jess too.
I'm not sure how much she knew, but she's really mortified. First thing in the morning, she says to him, please go, you've got to go. You know, it's time for you to go.
You really can't underestimate how horrible that makes you feel. Like, without oversharing too much, I did have an experience where a friend brought someone back to my house and then he tried to do things with me. And then I was like, what?
And she was in the room, wasn't she?
Yeah. And then it's like, you can't describe how disgusting you feel and like, and it's so frightening that someone's been in your home.
Yeah.
So, like, for all that she wasn't as aware of what's going on, that's completely terrifying.
Awful.
To have happened.
Awful. And one it's of her first sexual long. Encounters.
Yeah.
I mean, all her sexual encounters have been people pushing it and going against her consent. So, I mean, she's, awful for her. So... After that night, Connor disappears.
Good.
He is completely gone. No trace of him. She doesn't hear from him again. If she messages him, he doesn't
She's not going to miss the sound of his voice.
Yeah. There's literally...
Or the sight of his face. Yeah. Can you imagine? You'd just be seeing a hat in the street being like, Connor? Connor?
Is that true? So he's gone. But the next day, Aaron turns up with Alice's dad, picking Alice up from school. No broken bones, no evidence of being in a car accident.
Yeah,
absolutely fine.
Wait, so when she saw Aaron in her bed, she didn't go, oh, Aaron, what are you doing?
No.
She just said nothing
Aaron
and treated
asleep.
Him like Connor.
And then just went, you've got to go when you wake up in the morning.
Right.
So again,
I guess she just didn't know what the fuck to do.
Not standing up for herself, probably.
It just seems too improbable. Too improbable as well. Like, how do you reconcile those two ideas in your head, maybe?
So Jess told Alice that she thought that Aaron had assaulted her. And then Jess told the police that she felt that she'd been assaulted.
Oh, well done.
Yeah. And they went to question Alice and Aaron was there. And he said he hadn't done it. And then, so they sort of question him and then they sort of leave it. So Aaron and Alice are still together. They're still hanging out. And then a couple of days later, Luke appears again, Jess's old boyfriend.
The other rapey one. Brilliant.
On Facebook. And he says that it was him that went to Jess's house, not Aaron, and did stuff to Jess. So apparently it's Luke now. So Alice arranges to meet Aaron, but she tells the police because she is just so confused. And she wants to help Jess out. Jess still thinks it was Aaron because she saw him. So they arrest Aaron. They search Aaron and they try, because he's been arrested, they want to check him for anything that he's got. He refuses to take off his hat, so they pull it off. From under the hat tumbles long hair. The police officer looks at Aaron and says, you're a girl. And then it transpires in front of them is Gemma, who had been Aaron, Connor and Luke. Which is... so weird.
I want to know about Gemma and Jack's relationship then. She's just stood in front of a mirror going, you're cute. You're cute too.
So the name of the documentary was The Girl Who Became Three Boys. So that makes a bit more sense now. So this whole time, Gemma...
The girl who... That makes it sound like weird. Like the girl who was a serial rapist.
Yeah.
Like,
but it's so unbelievable. This is why it was such big headlines in the UK. So this whole time, Gemma has been... at first pretending to be Aaron and wearing a hood. So when Alice first met up with him, she didn't go, oh, there's my friend Gemma. What are you doing
here? Yeah, I'm going to say they know what she looks like in the face.
Just because he's got a hat on, which I find surprising. They did say in the documentary.
That's very surprising. If you saw me in a hat and you were like, who are you?
All right, new boyfriend. Yeah, really weird. And they're like, you can change your voice, but surely not that much. But they said that he sounded like a boy. Every time we spoke to him, it was like the voice of a boy. Like,
maybe they weren't that good of friends with Gemma.
They'd been hanging out with her, though, like a lot. So, yeah, so she was Aaron and had this hood, this hat on. Then she was Luke and had tracksuits on and a different hat.
So it's like she's got little cartoon character outfits. Like, this guy will always wear this hoodie. This guy will always wear this tracksuit. Like,
a little bit, but I think she did have a, sort of a little wardrobe for each of them. And then she was
Connor,
which I can understand a little bit more because obviously she thought, I can only do two voices.
That's like, what's funny. Like, I'm done. Like, I can't make up any more voices.
I can't do three boy voices.
You should have given her some tuition on accents. Like, Connor, he always types to me, except to ask, what's the time?
Yeah. And then, so these girls were totally taken into it. They were completely confused when it came out that the boys had been Gemma. They were asked, quite, how could their boyfriend be a girl? How did they not know? I mean, they were so confused. They were thinking, am I a lesbian? Am I still a virgin? Because obviously they hadn't had any penetrative sex.
They thought they'd be having sex with them.
Like, yeah. Which is why it was such a big story, because everyone was like, how the fuck did you not know? Which...
It is pretty unbelievable.
It is pretty unbelievable. I'm not trying to take away from the fact that they have gone through a traumatic experience, but I'm just saying what everyone was thinking. How did you not know? The only thing she said was that she said, when she looked at Aaron, she did say, oh, you could be Gemma's sister. You've really got the same teeth. And that's really kind of how
she's identifying them by their dental records.
But they had Facebook pictures.
Quite sophisticated, like, there, Alice.
The Facebook pictures. I mean, how different could you look with a hat on? Not that different. If I put a hat on, I've still got my face. Like, if you did some, like, creative makeup shit, you could
say maybe or doing, like, the sellotape facelift.
Yeah, I don't know. So, Gemma then claimed that Luke had assaulted her and that he had really hurt her and tried to claim money for that assault. But they
against a fictional person.
Yeah, so they were trying to track down this fictional person and say, because obviously when they found her, they knew, well, you're not Aaron, you're Gemma. Have you been pretending to be Aaron? But they didn't know about the other ones. So then they charged her with fraud for trying to claim money against someone who didn't exist.
And she's still a teenager too.
Yeah, and they searched her. They found that she had three phones. She had different Facebook logins. She had boys' clothes in her.
Where is your mother?
Yeah. So...
she had more money than sense. Three phones.
And a car.
Like, four wardrobes.
Yeah. Maybe she was quite well off and sort of bored.
Couldn't think of three accents, though. Maybe spend a bit of that money on, like, elocution lessons or something.
Jess had said that she believes that Gemma was in love with Alice, and she was sort of a confused, maybe bisexual or lesbian, and that was sort of her way of dealing with it, and that she was in love with Alice. She knew Alice wouldn't be interested. But she said that because she thought, well, Alice was always treated respectfully, whereas Jess was always, with both personas, sort of treated not very nicely by them both.
She's like the practice one. That's really sad.
So Gemma pleaded guilty to two counts of sexual assault and one of fraud. And everyone said that she didn't really show any remorse. She didn't show any emotion. She didn't seem really bothered by the trauma that she had caused to the girls and the confusion. And at that age... a lot of stuff will haunt you.
Quite formative still, maybe.
They did sort of, they did tests on her. They found that she was on the autistic spectrum. She was only given 2.5 years. So she's out of prison, but I still can't get my head around it. I mean, some people have a phone voice and they change their voice. Like when you phoned me the other Friday and were like, hey, girl. And I was like, who's killed Emma and taken her persona?
I was just happy it was Friday.
Like, holy shit.
It's like, what up, bitch?
Whereas my mum always answered the phone like, hello. Why are you already annoyed? You don't even know who it is yet. Why have you inconvenienced me by ringing my phone? So that's my story. I think it's one of my longest ones, actually, looking at the time.
Let us know if you've ever played Guess What's Up There.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fucking hell. Go!
Oh my god! Okay. I guess I'm ready. Okay, so. This week I'm pushing the boundaries of UK true crime slightly.
Because it's not in the UK.
Well, sort of. Well, America can definitely claim this person as their own, for sure.
Oh.
But I was definitely shocked about how much time this person spent in the UK and how integral the British people were into sort of bringing him to justice and uncovering his lies.
So we've not run out of UK criminals.
There's definitely a large part of UK involved in this, but the first half of this story starts with his life in America.
Okay. So we're not going to like include Gibraltar at a push yet.
No, but just disclaimer in case someone's listening halfway through and goes, "What the fuck has she done this week?" It's getting there. So
everyone forgets we're UK anyway all the time.
Although we
never introduce the podcast.
That's the thing. We do always say we don't ever tell people what it's like. We just expect them to have picked it up by now.
Yeah, if you're not starting at the beginning, you're not.
It's like, what's in my little black box? Is this murderer in it? Nope. This one? Yes, work out the link. Okay, so I'm going to do about Robert Elmer Cleason. People in America should have heard of him, maybe. There's a documentary about this case entitled The Real Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh.
It was in Texas. There wasn't a chainsaw involved.
Was there a massacre?
How many people do you have to kill for it to be a massacre?
5 or more.
Then it wasn't a massacre either.
But in the same room. Massacre's got to be in the same space, surely.
And there's only 2 people involved.
It's just a double homicide.
Yeah. I think it was just in Texas and they got excited. And it did happen like 3 or 4 months after the film Texas Chainsaw Massacre came out. Which is weird because then there's loads of stuff being like, ooh, he's the one who inspired the film. What, retroactively? Like, fire up the DeLorean and let's inspire a movie? No. So anyway, Robert Cleason. He was born in 1932 in Buffalo, New York. And there's little information about his childhood, but there's a book called Evil Among Us, The Texas Mormon Missionary Murders, where author Ken Driggs talks about an event that happened when Cleason was 18. So reportedly, he had been out and he'd stood on a rusty nail that had gone through his foot.
That's horrible.
It's like standing on a plug times 10,000, I would imagine. So his mum took him to A&E.
I love how we've done so many murders. We're like, oh, rusty nail.
Oh, standing on Lego.
Oh, that's brutal. Pulling out an eyeball. It's all right.
Both of my legs fell asleep today and I was trying to walk. I was trying to walk downstairs and I nearly did a mini cry. It was really painful. When, okay. Pins and needles, extreme. I'm such a wuss. Anyway, so when he was 18, this happened and he was in A&E. And it said that while he was there, he sort of snapped. I mean, it's possible that the waiting time is what did it.
Oh, God, yeah.
But he hit his mum.
Oh, fuck.
Punched his mum. He went out to the car and got her gun and then came back in firing shots around the waiting room.
Do you know what? Sometimes, though, I'm so pissed off, I think, what if I just did this? There's a way that I drive to work every day. You probably drive the same way, actually. And there's two lanes and the right lane's faster.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? But then also then you get another lane that opens up. That's why the right lane's faster, because they're turning, some people are turning right at the end. And people scooch down and they pull over to the left as they go round the roundabout. And I think if I had a gun, or if I could make a magical spell where something awful happens to you if you pull into the lane, then I fucking would. Or I really wanted to...
I'm glad you changed it to magic spell, because this was about to get used as evidence against you.
What I really want to do, which is much more passive...
I just want to bash their car.
Much more passive aggressive, is I want to print a big A3 laminate sign and say, if you pull into the left lane after being this lane, you're a dick. I think that would get my point across.
A lot more feasible. You could do that.
I genuinely really, really want to do it.
I'll bring my laminator next week.
Oh, shit, let's do it.
So he went in shooting around this hospital, but he didn't actually shoot any people. No one was injured.
Good.
Which probably just shows his frustration, because he was a keen hunter. He would be all his life. So it seems very likely that if it had been his intention to shoot people, that he would have been shooting people.
Yeah.
But this sort of rampage did mean that he was admitted to a psychiatric facility where he stayed from 1950 to 1952. So not much is known exactly about, I couldn't find much about what happened while he was there, but I think it's safe to assume that a 1950s psych ward, that they weren't really using restorative methods of treatment. There's he would have been electroshock therapy, surely.
Probably.
I mean, that started in 1940 and carried on, was still used sometimes.
Surprised he wasn't lobotomized. They were big on that then, weren't they?
Yeah.
Just waggle some metal rods in your head, in your brain.
And yeah, so it's likely that happened. In Return to Oz, it looks quite scary.
Yeah.
So I imagine it was horrible.
What, electric shock therapy?
Yeah. Because she's like, I've been to Oz. And they're like, fucking shock her. I think it can't have been the best experience for him. But then later in life, he ended up leaving Buffalo to escape bail because he had shot a man in the foot. Yeah. So it obviously hadn't helped him massively. He did travel around and he worked in various places. He was even a short period of time in the 60s, he was a deputy sheriff. But then I think he was dismissed because they said he's a bit of a loose cannon, a bit unstable. So eventually, by the early 1970s, Cleason was living in Austin, Texas. So as well as, like, as goes along with hunting, you're like, you're usually quite into what you do with them afterwards. So he was quite into taxidermy and he like hitched up his caravan at the back of this taxidermy shop place and would hang around there making friends.
What, with the animals?
With the people.
Good day, little squirrel.
With the people that worked there. So he was quite well known in the community. Like, he made himself known. He was out there talking to everyone.
If I did taxidermy, I would put little waistcoats on them and monocles, for sure. I could make them fun. I was watching this
program. Formal taxidermy.
I was watching this program today on Netflix, and it was people who are weird about people with weird animal stuff.
Oh, and Extreme Animal Obsessions.
Yeah.
I watched both episodes, yes. Like just the other day.
Yeah.
Last weekend.
And there's a body of deck dresses at Beatles.
Yeah.
And the Roadkill.
And she's like, I'm making Ryan Gosling out of Drive.
Obviously, the Roadkill one was British.
There was a Roadkill American one where he just ate moldy meat.
Yeah.
And then the Roadkill British one was like he served it up as a dinner party.
That's true. That's the difference.
He gave them a tasting soiree.
That's true.
It's a good show.
I'd go to that.
I would have gone to it. Not now, though.
No, because we're vegan.
But... yeah. Just in case you hadn't picked that up.
Because the first rule of being a vegan. first rule of being a vegan is
tell everyone you're a vegan.
Tell everyone you're a vegan. The second rule of being a vegan is tell everyone you're a vegan.
Yeah. So, like I said, he was in Austin, Texas. He was hanging out with the taxidermy gang. And then when he, so sort of the 1970s time, the Vietnam War was in its final stages. The Korean War had happened in the 50s. And sort of the age he was, it wouldn't have been odd for him to have sort of war stories to tell.
I don't know anything about wars.
They killed people.
I don't know how much I should know about wars, but I really don't know anything about wars. Apart from the British ones.
Well, I didn't know much about either of these, but it was possible that for the timeline that he would have been involved.
Okay.
So he said that he'd been in both those wars and he was impressed people by telling stories of his time being heroic, shooting down planes. And he also said that he'd worked for the CIA as like a secret agent, because first rule of CIA, secret agent, tell everyone. Very much like veganism, so I've heard. It's tough going and you need to tell people. And the cherry on top of his CV was he had several degrees, he had a couple of PhDs, he spoke loads of languages, still lived in a caravan though, around the back of a taxidermy shop. But
could hold down a job as a sheriff either.
Yeah. He also claimed that he was partly responsible for the assassination of Che Guevara.
Oh.
I don't know, he probably just shot a man with a beard and was like, how do I make myself feel better? He must have been Che Guevara. He shot a woman with a slight moustache. It was Hitler. It's totally fine. So anyway, so he had all these stories. And I think we both know that if you want to find a group of people who are willing to accept your far-fetched bullshit stories, you go to the religious ones.
Yeah.
Because they're really well practiced at it. Pretty good at turning a blind eye to contradictions. So Cleason found his tribe when he became baptized into the Mormon Church. So he really enjoyed this community aspect of the Mormon Church very much.
And the snazzy underwear.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Nice and warm, thermal.
But he sort of felt like he was sort of abusing it a little bit. He wanted to be in that community because of what they could do for him. And if ever he got in trouble, he was like, well, you guys are my church. You need to help me out, which is what churches do.
I like that about church, actually.
But he definitely took them for granted. Sort of like, again, early 1970s, around 1973, he was done for buffalo rustling, I saw. I thought the buffalo had died.
Yeah, I was told you massacred the lot of him.
I thought buffalo had died out, did they not?
I don't know. Maybe they farmed him and brought him back.
But then I just talked about a place called Buffalo, so I could be very confused. But anyway, he was arrested and charged for a minor crime. And the church responded quite initially, like they went to visit him a bit and they brought him some clothes and things. But there started to be problems.
What were those problems, Emma?
Turning a page quietly. They started to get a rise because Cleason felt that it was the church's responsibility to bail him out. And he was pretty pissed off that they hadn't had a whip round. They didn't. I think that shit might fly with the Catholics. Like, if you've done something bad, they're well up for a cover-up.
Nah, they will out you. They will discharge you from the church in a heartbeat. You get divorced, you won't have communion ever again. Marry a divorced man, you're still not invited.
Well, there's plenty of priests that got buffeted about to avoid charges.
That's true.
But anyway, the Mormons weren't having it, so they were like, you need to still do your time. And he just was moaning and moaning. He was really resentful towards him. And despite the fact that he'd made so many complaints and he was quite turning things nasty, there was still... he was still regularly visited by a couple of Mormon missionaries, because people know, like, when the young missionaries go out, they go in pairs.
Yeah.
So Gary Darley and Mark Fisher, both 21, 19, respectively, and they would go for dinner at his house every Monday night, just to sort of keep him in fellowship and chat to him. So others at the time reported that Cleason had a very unstable temper and that he could go from like 0 to 100 with very little warning. You wouldn't really
just
see
sitting in A&E and shooting up in A&E.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of behavior. And so people were coming quite uneasy, and especially when it seemed to be that he was actually a compulsive hoarder of guns. Not just that he was into it, but he was collecting them extensively. And what they didn't know was that he also had three wives, all of whom who'd left him because of issues with his behavior. The third one actually left him. It'd been triggered because she'd found him having a bath with a deer that he'd disemboweled.
Oh,
like,
my
just
God.
Like swimming around in,
yeah,
the
I would be
offal.
Out of there for sure.
So
and the guy who were like in that, sorry, back to that show, the guy who was eating dog food out of a bowl, and he was like, no one's ever divorced for that. I was like, they fucking should.
His wife, I was screaming at the TV about his wife.
Leave him.
She's there looking after a baby, and he's like, well, I just don't want the responsibilities. I just want to live life as a dog. Well,
sleep
fuck off and sleep
bed.
In the garden there. Ugh, he made me so angry, yeah, that man. It was the most selfish thing. The woman dressed Beatles up as celebrities, go for it.
That's cute.
Serve me a roadkill soiree when I'm not a vegan, go for it. Dress, like, trot around as a pony, fine. But fucking over your family because you want to roll around on the floor and snog your dog. No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Anyway, he was snogging the dog.
Was he?
Well, it licked in his mouth.
Dog breath as well. Oh.
Well. Who are we talking about?
Sorry.
So, Cleason, he again became more and more resentful towards the church, and he would start writing these really aggressive and violent letters to the local bishop. And so all the missionaries were warned not really to hang around with Cleason anymore and just be careful of him. But Darley and Fisher, they wanted to save him. Like, he'd been a member of the church, and they were like, this is an easy win, surely.
Yeah.
We can get him back. So they continued to visit, and then eventually the bishop gave them strict instructions. You need to stop going around to this guy's house. He's continuing to write really violent letters, like threatening to do horrific things. It's not safe for you to go see him.
Fair play.
So the boys felt a bit bad about it. So they said, okay, we're going to stop, but we're going to go and make a final trip just to say goodbye to him and let him know why we're not coming anymore. And they told a couple of other people that they were doing it too. So everyone knew they were going around to Cleason's for their farewell visit. And this was the last time that the boys would be seen.
Oh, I mean, I saw that coming, but oh.
Yeah. So 1974, we're in. Cleason was arrested for the murder of Darley and Fisher, despite no bodies ever being found. And the police began to try and unravel the many tales and aliases that Cleason had. He denied the charges completely, but he would change his story a lot. He said that, oh, they never came, or then he'd say they did come. He claimed that there was a Mormon conspiracy against him. He also said that the judge in the case was trying to send him down in order to silence him because he knew information about war crimes the judge had committed whilst he was a member of the CIA. Just really saying all sorts of bizarre things. He had been diagnosed, I think, as schizophrenic back when he was in the psych ward. Right. So they knew sort of these things aren't legitimate. So there was a lot of circumstantial evidence, though. Of course, he was the last person to have seen the boys. They also found a standard Mormon name badge with a bullet hole through it, which was found outside his trailer. And then inside, when they searched it, they found some blood-stained watches and some keys that were identified as belonging to the victims. So it's not known exactly what happened that night, but there were people who knew Cleason at the time that said he was obviously into guns, into shooting. And one of the things he'd do when people would come over, he had like a makeshift shooting range outside his trailer, and he'd take them out to show off how good he was and then say, right, as my guest, go and collect the target so you can see how good I was. And as they were bringing the target back, he would be aiming the gun at them right at the head to sort of shit them up. So it's thought that something similar happened, that he'd sent the boys to do it and then shot them as they were collecting the target. Inside the trailer, the police also found a manuscript that had been typed under one of Cleason's aliases, in which he goes into really horrendous and microscopic detail about how you can dispose of an animal carcass without anyone knowing it's been there. So they're saying he knew exactly what to do if he wanted to get rid of these bodies. And then in his taxidermy workshop, there was a bandsaw, and on it they found some hair that matched the missionary boys. So it's thought that the bandsaw had been used to cut the heads so they couldn't be distinguished as human, because every other bit that was cut up, he could dispose of it along with the other meat. Parts, flesh of the other animals, whereas the head would be really obvious it was human. So it's thought that he just cut it up so small. So they read his violent letters to the Mormon bishop at court, and that pretty much sealed his fate. So he was found guilty and he was sentenced to death. And that would be a great little Texas tale. However,
this is a British podcast, so
exactly, here comes the turn. So after he'd been 3 years on death row, Cleason and his lawyers, they appealed his sentence based on a technicality. They claimed that the search warrant that allowed them to get into the trailer, find the watches, find the manuscript, all of that wasn't legal.
I hate when it's stuff like that, because...
That's like classic Unabomber move. Yeah. That's exactly what he does. Yeah. Well, he doesn't get away with it, but I was like, it's the Unabomber again.
Yeah, I was already thinking Unabomber when I was thinking of...
I hope that's where he got the idea
stuff
for
that he wrote. But... yeah, I hate when it's such a stupid thing, because you think, yeah, but they still found it. Like, who gives a shit if they weren't supposed to be in there? But I guess, but the then law we know is there of, to protect.
I'm going
to
say it, and we know of other cases where we've heard that police will pin a crime on someone just because they think, okay, it doesn't matter how we got the evidence, and it might not be them.
True.
But he got away with it, so this must be what inspired Ted Kaczynski.
A little bit.
Because he did get away on this technicality. The sentence was overturned. And then the prosecutors, they could obviously retry him, but there was no new evidence. And not being able to use any of the evidence they found inside the trailer, they didn't want to risk going to trial and losing it, because then obviously he couldn't be tried again. So instead, in order to keep him in prison, they just tried him for all the different outstanding charges he had of other different gun offences and assaults. So like the shooting in the foot that we heard before and things like that. So altogether, with those charges, they managed to get him sentenced for 9 years in prison. But that is nothing to a man who's just escaped death row. He had like a renewed optimism for his future. And he started writing to different pen pal schemes and chatting to women and spouting his CIA stories and hoping to catch himself another bride. So one of his pen pals was the widow of a policeman, Marie Longley, from Barton-on-Humber in the UK. So it's technically in Lincolnshire, but it's the south end of the River Humber. So just opposite the river is Hull, which is Yorkshire. So they have like really good Yorkshire accents.
Yeah.
Don't try it. We've been in trouble for that.
They love my accent.
But it's a nice little villagey place. And I'm really surprised. He claimed to Marie that he wasn't actually in prison serving time. He said that he was there as a college professor educating the inmates.
You think she'd be like, not interested then. I've signed up to write to a criminal.
Well, I'm surprised that a policeman's wife was wanting to write to criminals anyway. Your husband's dedicated life to... Or maybe it's some sort of weird...
Maybe divorce. Oh, no, she's a widow, wasn't she? Maybe he was a shit husband.
Possibly. So he sort of convinced her, though, he would get, however he could, he would get photographs from other inmates where there were no people in or where there was odd people. And then he would send them to Marie and say, oh, here's a photo that I've taken, which is why I'm not in it, but to just prove that he was going around various places. It's basically like when that guy was stealing my traveling photos off Instagram and pretending he was...
Who was that?
When that guy, when we were in Copenhagen, and then some guy was like posting the same photos. Stolen.
Anyway, he's probably some.
What's more depressing about that is no one wants to catfish my actual face, just where I've been.
Yeah, but there's probably some reason that he's saying that. So maybe he'll be on the podcast one day. Wasn't there that girl who tried to convince her family she'd been around the world just by photoshopping photos in her room? Like, just go around the world, love.
Yeah. So 1988, his release date came around, and he was released in Buffalo again, in like sort of New York area, and his story was all over the news. He was extremely notorious. He was hounded quite a lot, and with good reason, because everyone's pretty sure that he's done these murders. Yeah. They're fucking pissed off that he's been released. So this is perhaps another reason that sort of pushed him to go and visit Marie Longley. So at the time, he obviously had been released, so he was given his passport back, and seemingly there were no checks required for him to come to the UK. So he claimed to Marie that he was coming for a holiday initially, but he arrived with a load of boxes. And 4 months later, he married her and moved into her cottage in Barton-on-Humber. There were pictures of the day that show him wearing a US Congressional Medal of Honor, which is one of the highest awards you can get. Or as they said in the documentary, said he'd got purple heart.
What?
A purple heart.
A purple heart.
Said he got purple heart. So, like I say, it's one of the highest honours they can give, sort of like a Victoria Cross equivalent.
So that's some sort of patriotic thing rather than a purple heart?
No, it's the name of the medal, like Victoria Cross thing, this Congressional Medal. But it's pretty impressive that he was able to get one pre-eBay days. Yeah. Like, don't know how he'd managed it.
Murder the man.
So that sort of convinced people that he was the impressive man he said he was. And he was telling anyone who would listen in the village about his war heroics and his adventures as a fighter pilot. After he got settled, he wanted to pursue his love of shooting. So, I mean, this is obviously sort of a pre-Dunblane still, but shooting wasn't like that big. So he had to satisfy himself by joining the local duck and fowl club, not the deer that he was used to. But once accepted to the club, he could then apply for the British gun license. So you sort of have to have the people vouching for you. So on his applications to the country, when it said, do you have any previous convictions? He just said, no. So then when the police do the checks for your, at the time, when the police did the checks for his gun license, they was like, oh, he's got no previous convictions. We'll give it him. So he was given the gun license. He was also given a permit to deal in guns as well. So he was able to buy loads and loads, and he began hoarding them. And Marie's house was soon absolutely full of guns. Like, he'd knocked down walls and like added in more space just so he could put his guns in there. But it just seems crazy that you didn't have to. I mean, I always think that about, you know, when you come to fly somewhere and you go through the anything to declare section, I always think, well, I'm just walking off in, because it's just like a corridor, isn't it? You walk left if you want to, got something to declare, walk right if the answer's no. And I think, well, how do they know I've not got anything?
They trust you. And as you're a white woman, they will never falter in that trust.
So is it just like an honesty system?
Yeah, but they'll do random checks. If you have got shit, then they'll be really pissed off with you.
So like I say, you can just say, at this time anyway, he just said he had no convictions and it looked no further. Marie's friends told how she pretty quickly realised into the marriage that she was stuck with a quite dangerous man. She said he'd sit at home cleaning his guns, and she said that when he was sort of checking in the sight, he would always search to aim for her head as he did it.
Oh my God, does she think she was thinking, maybe I shouldn't have written to a guy in prison and married him after 4 months?
You think so? Well, there's one of her friends who does an interview, and she basically said she knew it was wrong, but she sort of believed if you make a mistake, you have to live with it. Like, she wasn't the divorcing type. But she definitely knew he was intimidating, and she felt like he was threatening her. So Cleason, he sort of became a local gun expert then, and he would consult with the police. He became quite friendly with a lot of local police. They would come to him for advice on guns. But privately, he was bullying, he was beating his wife to the point where she would shut herself in the spare room pretty much all of the time that he was in the house, and then only come out when he was gone. So quite... he's almost living this double life. Like I say, he was big into the community, big talker, this massive, over 6 foot, quite large American guy in this small British village. He stood out. Everyone knew him. And at first they found him interesting with all of his stories. Then they sort of found him like, oh, okay, he's pretty amusing. Then they sort of saw he's pretty ridiculous. And soon his constant stories of adventure and far-fetched things, they earned him the nickname of the Mad Yank. And it's quite amusing because one of the documentaries that I watched, which was called The Real Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I think I mentioned that, they literally refer to him that, like, without skipping a bit, all the time. They didn't call him by his name, like, oh yeah, and then Mad Yank said this. They're not bothered one bit. It might have been a hint. So Mad Yank, they started to suspect more and more that he was completely bullshitting about everything. And he was starting to show his quick temper and his confrontational attitude more and more in public. So there was an event where which sort of ruined his reputation with the gun club members in such a delightfully British way. Basically, there was an argument over where he'd parked his car. So he'd been asked to move it by another gun member, but apparently he went up to him and said, the man telling the story refuses to swear. So he said, oh, is this your so-and-so car? Probably said, is this your fucking car? And then Cleason didn't like the way he was spoken to, didn't think he should have been asked to move his car by anyone. So he, after stewing for a while, he took out a loaded gun from his car, went into the clubhouse and aimed it at the guy's head.
Fuck.
And he said to him, if we were in Texas, I'd blow your fucking brains out.
But as we're in Britain, you're fine.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's illegal in Texas as well.
To shoot someone in the head. I think so. I guess he didn't have anywhere to bury it.
Possibly. And he just said afterwards, he was like, well, I'm sorry, but that's just the way I was taught to respond to things when I was in the CIA.
Because that's what they're always doing.
Again, I'm
losing
pretty sure.
Losing their rag and threatening to blow people's heads off.
Exactly. So he was fined for the incident, as was the other guy, because Cleason said, oh, he threatened me with a gun too. So the both men were just fined and they were allowed to keep their licenses. However, the gun club didn't really want him anymore and they were looking for an excuse to expel him. So a guy called Tony Fox now steps in as the hero of the piece.
He's got a hero's name as well.
He has.
Tony Fox.
And he's so unassuming. He's like a little guy, lithe, but like, nah, just, big Dwight Schrute glasses, like... Totally not the type. He knew of Cleason's temper. He was the local gun shop owner, and there'd been a couple of times where he'd sold him a gun or he'd ordered one in, and then Cleason had refused to pay for it and got really angry and aggressive if he'd asked for the money. So he decided to try and take him down using his very particular skill set, which is military nerdiness. He'd been suspicious about this Medal of Honor that Cleason had owned. So in 1999, he sent a fax to the Medal of Honor Society in America, and they replied confirming that no one, this Robert Elmer Cleason, he hadn't received an award at all. So Tony Fox then immediately kicked him out of the club, saying that we've all vouched for you, but you're lying to us, you're gone. So
how many has got to get rid of all of his guns then? He's out of the gun club.
He's out of the club, but he still has his license.
Right.
Cleason, though, lost his shit and he threatened Tony, saying that if this information ever gets out, then you're fucking in for it. But sly Fox, Tony, he'd already faxed it to the police. Like, he doesn't waste a minute.
Get that fax over. It's not what, that's all I know about fax machines. That
that's
noise.
The noise. So this sparked the police to do a bit more digging because obviously they knew the guy, but now he's obviously lying about stuff. So they ordered an Interpol inquiry and it came back with details of the string of gun offences. But weirdly, it didn't have any reference to the Mormon missionary murders, possibly because the trial was appealed. Maybe it didn't last. So police raided the cottage that he shared with Marie and confiscated his 42 guns that he had there. He even had a fucking Tommy gun. Like, that's insane. And apparently, as they did it, he was crying uncontrollably and sobbing that his children were being taken away from him.
Do you think that's part of the schizophrenia?
Possibly. Like, he definitely, people who knew him said that he definitely had an attachment to them. Like, they thought he was, that's how strongly he felt. So Marie's friend, Liz Butterfield, she became more and more concerned about her friend's well-being, particularly now Cleason had lost his guns. He seemed quite desperate and preparing to exact revenge. She also knew that he was concealing knives at various points around the house, taping them to beams in the cottage and stuff so that he could still be threatening. And at one point, Cleason moved a bandsaw into the home and Liz was like, this is not right. So, what does a pensioner do when they need help? She called up her son and told
ask a kid.
called up her son and asked him to get on to internet.
I've just got a couple of jobs for you. Oh God, that those words. When I go around to mum's, just got a couple of things. Oh, fucking what now?
Worse than a couple of things is if your mum's asking you for help with anything on the internet.
Yeah.
That is not going to have been a fun evening that they spent at the Butterfield house.
I used to give her lessons on the internet. That was my darkest time.
Yeah.
So fortunately, the same lesson every week.
Fortunately, Liz's son didn't commit another murder, but he did help her out. And so they were trying to see what they could find on Robert Cleason. So they knew that he'd, from the information that had come through with the Interpol inquiry, Marie had said that he'd been in the New York system. So Liz's son went online and he basically was able to go to the New York Department of Correction website and just search him in their prison records. And it was all there.
Wow.
So they learned of all the assault charges fully, and then they were able to follow a link to the Texas Department of Corrections where they learned about his previous stint on death row. So Liz sat Marie down, cup of tea, and tried to persuade her to leave Robert, but she refused. She said she was so terrified that he was going to carry out his threats to kill her. I mean, he said before, if you ever leave me, I'll kill you. And she was worried that if she went round and stayed at Liz's, that he'd just come and he'd kill both of them. She was absolutely just so frightened. 3 days later, Marie disappeared.
Oh,
I love you, like, trying to look at the book to see what's going to come next.
It's like with a horror film. If it gets really scary, I Google the plot and read it on Wikipedia. And then I'm like, yeah, I could probably do this now.
So Cleason filed a missing persons report, but following what they just learned, the police were suspicious that he had something to do with it.
It's a lesson to be learnt there, isn't it? If you're with someone that you're scared is going to hurt you, if you leave them, all the more reason to leave them.
Yeah.
Get out.
Luckily, Marie was on that vein. Her disappearance wasn't a fatal attack from the husband. It was a secret escape plan plotted by her and Liz Butterfield.
Amazing.
The pensioner, Thelma and Louise. So, like, I just love every bit of this because in order to get her out with her belongings, they set up a fake jumble sale story.
Believable.
Exactly. So Marie was putting stuff in plastic bags and just leaving it at the front door, because that's what women do. If they're taking stuff to the jumble sale, you start piling it up at the front door. And Cleason knew, I'm not asked about any of that. So Liz arrived at the crack of dawn before Cleason was going to be up to collect Liz, and then with the jumble, they drove her to a safe house 50 miles away. The police did eventually find her 5 days later, but when she explained the situation, why she was there, I mean, she hadn't told police before because she knew that Cleason was sort of friendly with a lot of them and she was worried that they'd sort of be on his side and not take it seriously. But now that she knew they were a bit more on her side, they had another raid on their house. And they found that Cleason now had two, now illegal, guns. One was complete with a silencer. March 2000, so his late 60s, March 2000, he was charged then with this illegal possession of firearms. But, bizarrely, he was released to await his sentencing. And they allowed him to return to Barton-on-Humber and to the house, which, obviously, Marie had been able to get a divorce in this time. She was granted that. But it was fucked up that he was now chilling in her house while she was having to hide somewhere else.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Because she was just too scared to come back to the village while he was there.
Yeah, if she knew he was out of prison, she would definitely be flipping terrified.
So, however, while he was out on this release, it seemed that he was planning to repeat the patterns that he had before and just skip the country before his sentencing. So he started writing to pen pals, this time in Germany. And so early that year, he left Barton-on-Humber with a moving van full of furniture that was taken from Marie's house and his German fiance, who would soon become his fifth wife. And they went to the Hull docks to catch a ferry. Police were sort of alerted to the fact that he was on the move and they followed him. He wasn't booked onto the ship, but they were pretty certain he was going to stow away. So they arrested him there. And he was sentenced to 3 years for the possession of firearms. And he was held in Belmarsh prison. But then he was kept there because there was new DNA evidence being discovered in the case of Darley and Fisher, the two boys that were murdered. They found blood and hair that they could now match to the two boys in some like barrels or something near his trailer. Gleason, now 70, they're trying to extradite him. Sorry, that's why he was being held for longer. So they were trying to get him sent to the USA to finally be punished for these murders. But he's 70 now. He suffered heart failure and he died right before he could be sent back to America.
So he got away with it, really?
Pretty much, yeah.
Twat.
No, but we tried our best. Like, Tony Fox was on it.
Well done, Tony. Okay, thank you for listening. I'm wearing a t-shirt right now, which is out of a true crime box that got sent to us.
Oh my God, the Just Killing Time box.
It's really good.
Amazing.
Yeah, so if you're into subscription boxes, I think they're posting anywhere in the world. But go have a look at their website. It is cool.
I was incredibly impressed with it. Like, because I was thinking, what on earth do you put in a true crime box? What sort of things do we want? But an art print that was really cool.
Mug, book, magazine.
Like these trading cards.
But also everything was really cutely wrapped. And everything had cute sort of little designs. Oh, wait, yeah. Just
we say cute, but like as in like bespoke paper for the Killing Time, like with their little logos on. It's such good quality, the stuff. It wasn't just thrown in a box. Everything was really well thought out. It felt like a proper gift.
Yeah.
I loved it. We opened it in Pizza Hut.
Yeah, we had vegan pizza.
Vegan pizza. We opened it in Pizza Hut. And the waiter was like, are you ready? Or shall I come back in another hour? Like, Jesus Christ, I'm just looking at my Manson t-shirt. Fuck up.
He's a dick. Yeah, so if you want to support us, though, you can do on Patreon. There's a new episode of Mother Daughter Slaughter, which is 25 minutes of true crime. I mean, for $5 on Patreon, you get a handwritten card with a design that I crafted. You get stickers, you get the new design of stickers, and you get to listen to 4 episodes of The Daughter Slaughter and a little bit of me and Emma talking shit as well. So I think that's not bad, actually, for $5 a month. So if you want to do that, you can sign up for $1 and just vote for the Slash and Dash episodes. You can sign up for more and get a tote bag. So that's on patreon.com/slaughterthepodcast, I think, but just Google it.
We've had a couple of requests this week for if we're still selling t-shirts, and you can still get t-shirts and other merch without being a patron. You can go to Spreadshirt or Threadless.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're hard to find, so the best thing to do is go to the Facebook group and look at the pinned post. You can just leave the Facebook group straight after if you think it's
Stop telling people to leave things straight away. Whatever. Cut that. I cut the bit where you said, oh, and then just leave the Patreon. No, get them in the Facebook group.
Join the Facebook group. Stay in the Facebook group. Tell us about your favourite true crimes. And then buy some t-shirts. Happy?
Yeah.
And we're going to have a new t-shirt design soon. But for now, you can only get the new design for... It's on stickers from being a patron. But we will roll it out.
They should get it first. But it is super cute.
Yeah.
And cute, again. We use cute in a way that means like scary. Things we like. Not cute as in puppies and rainbows.
No. And follow us on Twitter at SlaughterThePod. Or just... email us slaughterthepodcast@gmail.com. Luke says we've got to go. Bye!
Bye!
And remember, listening to Slaughter doesn't make you a psycho.
Playing Guess What's Up There also doesn't make you a psycho if it's consensual and like something you kind of want to do.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.